Steve. Thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder. Welcome to the show, the Monday show. We are at 312-981-7200. Wendy, you have already chosen the topic for today, and I'm shocked at what you want to discuss.
I want to talk sports.
If we have to.
I'm really enjoying what's going on in Chicagoland, sort of. The Bears were crazy good.
I did not watch the game. I didn't see any of the game. I didn't expect them to win yesterday or next week or anytime soon, but they did win last night.
I don't think they expected them to win.
I don't think they did.
Guys, they tried not to.
I just wanted them not to have zero on the scoreboard. So I was just excited that they were ahead at the beginning, and then it was tied. It was very exciting and overtime. And then they actually walked away with a win.
Now, here's what I was afraid of when I found out that they won, that there'd be some Bears fans in the city who went, you know, now with Aaron Rodgers out, we have a chance at winning the division. Spoiler alert, no, you don't. It's not going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen, but I love Mitchell Trubisky. I know I'm jumping on the bandwagon, although I started driving the bandwagon because I went to the first preseason game. Mm-hmm. And it was weird to hear the announcement going, pass complete. That was strange.
People had to look that up. Wait a second. He threw the pass. Another guy caught the pass. Yeah, pass complete.
He's young. He's fresh. And he looks like he could be a leader. He doesn't get backed into a corner. He can run if he has to. He can throw when he needs to. It's I'm feeling very good about this.
He also doesn't seem to be a head case, which the Bears have had a problem with in the QB position in the past.
I agree with you. Just a normal kid.
He seems like a good guy. I want them to win. I don't know how regularly they will win anytime soon, but down the line I'm hoping that that becomes more regular. So let's see what happens.
How's Jimmy Glennon feeling? Mike Glennon,
yeah.
Whatever.
Jimmy's his brother. He's going,
Jimmy's
they
really
put my
bummed.
Brother in. Yeah. Why don't they let my brother play anymore? I don't know. They gave him a chance. You know, it didn't work out. That's all right.
You know what? And you have to earn the chance.
Right. And play your best guy. Well, originally, when they said, hey, we drafted this guy very high, we're going to sit him down for a year, I went, well, what was the point of trying? Put him in.
I agree.
Let him play.
Blackhawks, that was an exciting game.
Yeah.
They won.
Yeah.
Cubs, what? Guys.
That's the
Come
problem.
On, gang.
Yes.
I really feel bad for the Cubs right now.
Yes.
I don't remember what night it was where the big putting the leg out in front of the plate.
Right.
As that was happening.
Wilson Contreras. Yes. They said block the plate because he blocked the plate. Forever in baseball, that was legal. They just changed the rule a year ago where you're not allowed to do that anymore. And it's too bad because that's the way that play should go out. You don't want the guy having access to the plate. You do whatever you can. And it ended up, in the long run, it didn't cost them the game. It cost them a run.
Exactly.
But not the game.
But it messed with their morale.
It did a little bit.
And it got Joe Maddon kicked out.
It did. Yeah.
But as that was happening and there were questions, I said to Jimmy Mack, can you block the plate like that? And he said, yes, as long as you have the ball.
Right.
And that was the whole thing where they were showing he didn't really quite have the ball yet.
Mm, right.
But again, until Buster Posey, wasn't it?
Yes.
Not only was that legal, that was a good play.
That was the best play.
It was a great play.
Yeah.
And the announcers, who I find not to be that good, by the way.
I think Ron Darling's really good.
I did.
Last night's I didn't enjoy.
No.
Whoever did that last night.
I don't remember. I know it's Ron Darling doing color. I don't know who's doing play-by-play. I can't think of his name.
But when that was going on with the plate, with the legs sticking out and blocking it, you need an alley for the play. I mean, it was so interesting to listen to the announcers going, I'm still saying that was a great play. This is unfortunate.
Well, now there's talk that they may repeal that rule, and that would be really nice. Forever, what he did, what Wilson Contreras did to get in the way of the plate so it would be very tough for the runner to score, that was the legal thing to do.
I mean, and remember, you can think of it, Wendy. There used to be huge collisions at home plate.
Yeah. And that's why it stopped, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't know. That I felt bad. But then, you know, people were criticizing Joe Maddon and his pitching decisions more than the actual call at the plate. And you guys are Cubs fans. I want your thoughts on that.
I think in both games one and game two, Steve, you tell me if you believe this too, I think the starting pitcher has been given the hook a little early in both games.
I have one other question with John Lackey. Isn't he a starting pitcher?
Normally he is. When you get to the playoffs, you go with a 3 or 4 man rotation, not a 5 man rotation.
He did show he's not a reliever.
Last night he did. I have to be
but
honest.
But aren't those two different things? Like
so
a closer?
We're talking about this mindset. Because the starting pitchers, when they come in early in the game and they're going to do a few innings maybe, they've been very effective. I think it's hard to bring someone in late in a game in a pressure situation if that's not your routine.
Right.
Yep.
Because there's no margin
that,
of error.
For the first time in any of our lives, the Cubs are in the National League Championship Series for 3 years in a row.
Right.
So I'm not going to question
no,
Joe
that's
Madden's
a
pitching.
Right. It's hard to. It's hard to criticize it. They've talked about what the Cubs call a circle of trust with the relief pitchers. And what that means is they've got 5 or 6 relief pitchers and almost none of them have been effective lately. So in yesterday's case, I got to say they got a lot out of Carl Edwards Jr., which is nice because there's days
he
where he
well.
Has it and there's days where he doesn't.
That first game, he pitched to what, one batter?
Yeah, he walked a guy on 4 pitches and was shown the exit. And Brian Dunsing pitched himself out of a jam or two last night. It just happened that John Lackey couldn't get it done. He gave up a home run to Thorin Oakenshield, who many of you know from Fellowship of the Rings, a long, long home run to deep center field.
Who is that guy?
Justin Turner.
Turner.
Yeah.
He has got to shave.
He's got the, he's an interesting guy because, or groomer, because if you see him with his hat off, he's bald on top.
Yeah, he is.
And there aren't many guys anymore who, usually they'll just shave their head.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
He's got a little monkish thing going.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't mind the hair that much. I can't stand. I would have, and I don't know who the girl is because I never watched Cubs games until now. I really don't. And she's interviewing him, and she's like an inch away from that beard. And I'm like, move your head back. It's like you're right in it.
Right.
Lice can jump that far.
Oh, it's so horrible. And then my big question that I have to know the answer.
What's this?
Yasiel Puig.
Yes, Yasiel Puig.
Kept licking his bat.
Yep.
Why? Does he like the taste of pine tar?
No one knows why he does it, but he does it pretty frequently. Like one time is too many for me. If somebody goes, just lick the bat one time, I go, I'm not going to lick a bat. No. But he does it a lot. He just, chewing tobacco, Wendy, not good for you. But studies are very inconclusive on whether licking a bat is good or not good for you.
I think he likes to do anything that he thinks might lend more people toward looking to him.
He does.
Yeah, the lightning bolts in the hair, that's cool,
too. That's an interesting look.
But the bat licking, I can't get past. As we're watching the game, he goes, hang on a minute. And, he had to hit rewind. And then I looked online, and it's like he does that frequently. And the first, I guess there's video of the first time he licked a bat, and he made like a crazy face because it's like,
it doesn't taste
that's not
good.
Good.
No.
But
nope.
Yet he keeps doing, I can't.
I think he did an interview after game one and talked about that was his second playoff home run that he hit. And then.
And it's
night,
not the case. It was his first, but he demanded that it was his second.
Right. No, yeah, well, he's actually only got one.
Right. During the post-game interview, they said, hey, what was it like to hit your first? And he said, no, that was my second. But, they've got records of stuff like this. They went back in records and they go, no, it's your first. But even though I keep watching him lick his bat, I would rather do that than eat Brussels sprouts. So what does that tell you? If somebody said to me, you have the option, here's one Brussels sprout or a bat, a Louisville Slugger, I'll lick the bat.
I love Brussels sprouts, so you obviously hadn't had them prepared. I thought he was going to lick Justin Turner after he did that walk-off home run.
You don't want to do that.
Because there's no place to lick him.
That's why. Now, as much as it pains me to say this, I'll say this. The Cubs don't deserve to go further if they're going to continue to play this way. If I lived somewhere else and didn't watch a season's worth of Cub baseball, I'd go, how did these guys get this far? They're not hitting.
They're not hitting.
Chris Bryant is just he's swinging. I mean, the ball's there and the bat's there. They're just not connecting.
I think
we all need
an off night, Bill.
We do all need an off night. We need one night to not worry about it. Javi Baez in game one swung at a ball so high. They even said that may be the highest pitch anyone's ever swung at. And they also said that he's swinging when he gets off the team bus, which is both funny and true at the same time. He's just swinging at pitches. Like, sometimes he'll swing twice at the same pitch. It's like a Daffy Duck cartoon.
What happened?
Everyone's just trying to get it done themselves instead of the right way to do it, which is get guys on base, move them over, and get them in. They're just
which
not
is
doing
what
it.
They're known for.
I know.
It's not a long ball. Let's get load up the bases.
So frustrating.
It's going to click this week.
I hope so.
I think the winds are going to be blowing in. So
when they do that shift, because they do it on Bryant and they do it on Rizzo, so they get three guys on one side and one guy on the other, and they play them deep, throw down a bunt. Just bunt and get on base. No one's there to field it.
Was it Lester that did the bunt and knocked himself out?
Yes.
The bat hit him in the chest. I don't know that it hit him that hard. I think it might have just startled him because he hit the dirt.
Yeah, it knocked him out.
And then the announcers, whom I didn't like, but they gave me great material and information, was, you know, you're not supposed to have your fingers in the front of the bat.
Right.
He's a pitcher. Why would he be doing that?
He's very mysterious. There's a couple of things that... The mere fact that he's not comfortable throwing a ball to first base is also very confusing.
Have you ever seen a guy picked off on the back leg?
Never. Never.
I mean, it's amazing.
That doesn't happen.
Right.
All right. We're hoping for the best. We are so hoping for the best. I'm not giving up, but I'm just saying that the team we've seen of late is not the team that should go to the World Series and eventually win the World Series. They have to do the right things to get them there.
Even I want them to win. I am not rooting against them.
Thank you for that.
That's all I can say.
That's
and
so
I've
nice
watched
of you.
All these games, and now it's like, you know, when Addison Russell had that hit. Whoa, come
yeah.
on. I love him.
Both
I know
games,
their names.
They've come out to the lead, and they didn't do that a lot in much of the season. They were usually trailing early on. They've had the lead. They just, it's just not. It's not the Cubs that I'm used to seeing, you know.
Well, they're coming home for what, three games?
Two games.
Two games, and then they go back?
Yeah.
They got the.
Win them both, please.
I'm not going to say a must win, but a
no,
should win.
Oh,
can I say should win?
Yeah.
This morning, shoot, Wendy, I was thinking of that. I wanted to tell Bill this is a must win.
No, it's not a must win.
Should win.
We would hope that they would win, a should win, a could win, please win.
But not a must win.
Not a must win. Not yet. All right, we'll take a quick break. There's more to discuss. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, several people have texted in saying I'm wrong, that the Cubs will now be home for the next three games. I was under the impression it was 2-2-1-1-1.
I think it mattered whether or not they won one in L.A.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I heard. I heard that I don't know. I just know that they're home for three games because I've been doing my homework because I'm a sports fan now.
I don't think Game 5 depends on if a team
Maybe
wins
not.
Or loses.
But a bunch of texts telling you, just so you know.
Well, let's hope there is a Game 5.
Yeah.
I don't care where it is. I don't care when it is. I will watch it, and I will not lick a bat during the game, Wendy.
Well, someone has suggested that maybe some of our Cubs players need to start licking the bat, like Yasiel Puig.
The Cubs should all, half an hour before the game, get out early and just start licking the bats and see what happens.
I got to tell you. Well, let's take Ted's call. He's been on hold for a while. Ted, you know why Puig licks his bat? I love this joke.
No, I don't know why, honestly, but I was bouncing between the radio broadcast last night, and, you know, you'll hear an announcer say, you know, you come to the ballpark, you'll see something you've never seen before, and when Pete was doing it, he said, I just watched Yasiel Puig lick the bat, and then there's silence, and he says to his color guy, whoever it was, he goes, have you ever seen that before? And the color guy goes, no.
No. No one else does that.
And a few minutes later, the color guy goes, he says, you know, I don't know, I wouldn't say that this is the case, but maybe he's got a nutrient deficiency or something, you know?
That could be it. Now, Wendy just asked me, Ted, and my wife asked me the same thing yesterday. If he's licking the bat, can't the pitcher then lick the ball? And that's illegal. A pitcher can't lick a ball,
that's
but
a
batter
spitball,
can't.
Right?
Right.
But
yeah, you can't get away with doing that. So, I don't, you know, it seems like, I don't know. Maybe they figured they'll let the batter get away with it because if he licks the fine car, he's got a real problem. And that's his own fault.
His tongue will stick to it. It'll be like a Ren and Stimpy cartoon
right.
or something.
Right.
Well,
like in a Christmas story.
Right. They'll be asking what happened to play. They'll be like, ooh, ooh, ooh. You know, can't tell you nothing.
Thank you, Ted. Have a good one.
Yep. You too.
But, you know, I mean, I have noticed baseball players are so quirky. I know
sure.
they have their traditions and their habits and their rituals. But John Lackey does a lot of finger licking. He's finger licking good.
Yes.
And then he touches his ball cap.
Yes.
And then, so, I mean, licking his finger after touching that ball is probably just as bad as licking the bat. Because the ball gets more in the dirt.
Yeah, I guess.
And I'm telling you, Rizzo does that three pumps every time he's up at the plate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it drives me nuts. Mm-hmm. It's like, all right, he's going to, you know, move forward. He's going to thrust three times, and it's three times all the time before right. he hits.
I think for them, it gets them into some kind of a comfort zone to do some kind of a routine, you know? It makes them more comfortable. And for him, he's one of two guys on the Cubs team who's batting over 200 in the postseason.
Keep doing it.
Let him do whatever he wants to do. I always wonder if when kids see stuff like this, because kids like to emulate their favorite baseball players, are little leaguers now licking their bats? Are they doing the pumps? I don't know.
It's so weird. And then there was some pitcher, I don't even remember which team it was, because I think it was the
Dodgers. I can help you. Was he successful or not successful?
He was successful.
He was a Dodger pitcher.
It was a Dodger pitcher. And he kept adjusting his jersey on his... Now I'm thinking he was a lefty. Yeah. I'm not sure. But whatever hand, he just kept every time between every pitch.
He'd go to the
so
shoulder.
I know they have these quirky little things. Yeah. I've been enjoying watching their quirks.
Yeah. Well, that's been the thing to watch because the Cubs haven't had a lot of traffic on the base paths. Their third base coach went and saw a movie during the game yesterday. There's
yeah, but it was
do.
Victorian Abdul. It was a good movie.
Right. It was a great movie. But still, during a game, Steve, that's uncalled for.
Come on, Cubbies. I hate Cubbies. I hate saying Cubbies. I'm going to slap myself for saying that. It's Cubs.
It's Cubs. Let's hope they wake up. Wake up, fellas. Come on.
Start hitting.
We'll take a quick break. We've got some news and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Helps you out with looking up words. Walks you through the pages of meanings. Leads you on part of the speech. Sentences to express your feelings.
That's a beautiful song, Randy.
Is the name of someone, place or
today,
state.
Bill, National Dictionary Day. It was created in honor of Noah Webster's birthday, October 16th, 1758. We have way more words now than we did then. And on the line with us is Steve Kleinedler. Steve, you are
You can do this.
Lexicographer?
I am a lexicographer. That is correct.
And that is a person that works with words, right?
Yes. I'm a dictionary editor and have been for quite some time.
How's your vocabulary?
It's fairly good. I, like many people, though, you know, I certainly don't have the dictionary memorized. I, on occasion, have to look up words myself. So that's, you know, why there are reference works.
Steve, they always talk about words that have been added to the dictionary. Is there ever a time they just take words out of the dictionary? They go, enough of this. No one's using this. Let's get rid of this word.
Nowadays, not as much as they used to. In back when dictionaries were entirely print, to add material, if you didn't add pages, you'd have to take stuff out. But nowadays, since so much of it is done online, there's relatively little that gets taken out. Usually, we don't put a word in unless we think it's going to stay around. So the stuff that does come out tends to be really arcane scientific terminology, for example. But by and large, we don't delete that much.
Steve Kleinedler, in addition to being a lexicographer, is also the executive editor for Reference Group at Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, publishers of the American Heritage Dictionaries and the Webster's New World Dictionaries. Do people still have dictionaries now, or do we all go online?
We certainly still sell print dictionaries. People buy print dictionaries still, certainly not at the rate that they used to decades ago, but they are still out there. And, of course, our products are available online, too. The American Heritage Dictionary, you can look up words at ahdictionary.com. With Webster's New World Dictionary, there's an arrangement with the Associated Press Style Guide. And when you subscribe to their online style guide, you also get the Webster's New World Dictionary information there.
Steve, I'm guessing there had to have been a huge influx of words because of the internet. Has that created a lot more words than anything else over the last couple decades?
There are a lot of different ways that words enter English. And, of course, science and technology is a very productive method. And with the internet, not only do you get brand new words, but you also get meanings of existing words that get new meanings, as simple as stream and browse.
Mouse.
Scroll. Yeah, all of these, you know, even cut and paste, all of so much of the terminology that's used with computer science and internet science specifically stems from already existing words that said new words come into being as well.
I am irritated when people say words wrong, and I would imagine that, Steve, that bothers you quite a bit. I hate when people say espresso, because it isn't. It's espresso.
Unless it's a former presso, then it's espresso.
Yes.
That's still allowable, right?
There's
everyone definitely has their pet peeves. As a linguist and a lexicographer, my duty is merely to describe how people use the language. And when there are issues like this, we point them out in a usage note, saying that this is how the standard form is used. This is what a lot of people use. Some people don't like it, so use caution.
All right, I have a word I'd like to make sure I'm pronouncing correctly, and a lot of people mispronounce it. It starts with a J, and it involves rings and earrings and necklaces. How do you say that word?
Are you talking about jewelry?
Yes. And how do people usually say it, which drives me nuts?
Well, you can pronounce it with three or two syllables. You can enunciate jewelry, or you can do it as two syllables and say jewelry. They sound very similar. What pronunciation are you referring to?
A lot of people say jewelry. It drives me nuts.
Oh, they add in an extra us.
Yep, jewelry.
Athlete for athlete, kind of thing. Yes, that is a phonological process called epenthesis, where you add phonetic material that isn't necessarily there. You're right. A lot of people do say that.
But Steve, Wendy thinks those people should be imprisoned. That seems extreme, doesn't it?
It's prison, by the way.
but Steve, a lot of times what happens is if enough people say something incorrectly enough, it becomes an accepted form, doesn't it?
That's true. I mean, you look at the word which now is standardly pronounced harass. A couple decades ago, it was almost only pronounced Harris. And over time, the harass pronunciation became more and more prominent. And by now, it's the more favored pronunciation. So in certain cases, pronunciations do shift over time.
Like, for instance, I always thought it was divisive. And I heard our former president, Barack Obama, say divisive, which is correct.
Divisive is another word that we have a usage note about. Let's see, in 2013, the American Heritage Dictionary, we have a usage panel that consists of a lot of writers and poets and English professors, people who use English as part of their job. There's about 150 of them, and we ballot them annually on various items. And in 2013, the word divisive is normally pronounced divisive, and it's the preferred pronunciation of 88% of the panel. It's changed over time. Divisive was acceptable to 16% of the panel in 2001, but by 2013, 65% of the panel found it acceptable. It is changing, but it is still the divisive pronunciation would still be considered a variant.
How does our language compare to other languages just in terms of volume? Do we have more words in the English language than most other or not?
No, every language has almost every language has the ability to add by using prefixes or suffixes or whatever mechanism in the language. You can take existing words and add affixes to them to create new words. It is a very robust language. We pull in word stock from all over the globe, but then again, so do other languages too. Other languages are taking in words from other languages and English as well. So most languages tend to be very robust and productive.
All right. What if you get something on an ice cream cone, but it's not ice cream, and it's either grape or orange or green? What is that called? Starts with an S.
Stuff that you put on top of ice cream?
You put it on top of an ice cream.
It's an alternative to ice cream.
Yes, and it starts with an S, and people say it wrong. I want you to say it the correct way.
I'm still not sure what you're saying. You mean a sundae?
No, sherbet.
Oh, that type of, I'm sorry. I completely didn't get where you were going.
That's all right. They were bad clues, but it's not sherbet, is it?
It's sherbet, but I believe we have another note there as well. We do. It's more about how the word entered English. Sherbet without the R, is a frozen dessert made mainly of fruit juice, fruit puree, sugar, milk, or cream. But sherbet with the second R is an acceptable variant. If you go to ahdictionary.com and type in sherbet, you see a really fantastic history of the word going back to Ottoman Turkish and Persian, where the word came from and how it's related to the word sorbet. But anyhow, it's sherbet, but sherbet is an acceptable variant.
But you can say sherbet if you're agreeing with your friend Bert, can't you?
Oh my God, please stop. we have Steve Klein Edler on the line with us, and he's a lexicographer, and he compiles dictionaries, mainly American Heritage Dictionaries and the Webster's New World Dictionaries. We're going to take a quick break. We have a lot of people texting in things that people say wrong, and of course, we are celebrating National Dictionary Day, so happy day to you all. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Oh, yes, it's Bill and Wendy, and we are celebrating National Dictionary Day. So on the line with us is lexicographer Steve Klein Edler. You also noticed something.
Steve, were you in a TV show called Wrapped for a while?
Yes, I was. Well, it was a web series, yeah.
Yeah. How about that? Congratulations.
Well, thank you. Someone was checking my IMDb there. Yeah, and back in Chicago, actually, I'm one of the founding members of Shattered Globe Theater.
Wow.
On the side. So, yeah,
that's
I've done
excellent.
A lot of theater, too.
Good for you.
All right, there's a word that people say that I say wrong, and I need to clear this once and for all with a lexicographer. It's a little potato dumpling, and I say gnocchi.
Gnocchi, yes.
It's not gnocchi.
It's probably, as you were seeing from this, there are a lot of words that have multiple pronunciations, and that's just because, you know, there are so many people who speak English. But I say gnocchi. We show both pronunciations, gnocchi and gnocchi.
All right. So don't make fun of me anymore, right, Bill.
How many times, Steve, did you hear this as a kid? You'd say to your parents, there's a word I got to spell. I don't know how to spell it. And then they'd always say, well, look it up in the dictionary. But the point is, if you don't know how to spell it, looking it up in the dictionary is not the easiest thing in the world to do.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, I was kind of a dorky child, so I didn't have to tell me to go look it up. I kind of immersed myself
on your own.
On my own, yeah.
Smart.
So it's to me, it was a really cool experience to have this giant 2,400-page book or whatever, and just plowing through it, looking things up when you're on the page. And this is something that's lost when people look up stuff online. But in the old days, when you had a print dictionary, you'd look up a word and you'd get lost on the page because you'd learn all these facts about other words
right.
that fall on the page, you know, which is a really interesting way of learning, you know, new information. So,
well, it was also fun as a kid. You'd look up dirty words. You'd look up swear words, and that was fun. But now, because of the internet, it's not as much fun as it used to be.
Well, yeah, they're pretty ubiquitous on the internet, but in larger unabridged dictionaries, they're there too. And, you know, maybe you'll learn a fun fact about
yep.
the history of the word or something in doing that.
Yep.
Bill, did you giggle when you would look up an alternative word for tailbone?
Did then and still do today, yeah.
That's coccyx.
Yeah.
Correct?
Coccyx, yes.
Yep.
All right. We have some listeners who have some questions for you. Steve Klein Edler on the line with us. Mike, do you have a comment or question?
Yeah, I got a question. The word especially, which I use, a lot of my friends use especially, like there's an X in it. Can you tell me what...
That happens a lot with certain sound combinations where the consonant clusters are switched, where extra sounds were added. It's a phonological process that is common in English, and certainly with words like especially, or as Wendy mentioned, espresso. Technically, the correct pronunciation is with the consonant, this consonant followed by the consonant, you know, sp. But people have incorporated this KS pronunciation instead of the SP pronunciation. It's a well-known process, and that said, the actual pronunciation of especially remains with the SP sound.
So, Mike, tell your friends that they are incorrect and you are right.
Yes.
What has happened with words that have the ST together? For instance, street. People put an H in there a lot more frequently than I've ever heard. Someone had a stroke. It's just the STR.
That's a phonological process, affrication, where, and there's certain dialect areas of the country. I know, for example, upstate New York very commonly says street for street. You know, when the S and the T, when your tongue is articulating that at the point in the mouth, the S sound is becoming an esh sound. So st comes out sht. It's a it is just a phonological process, and it's a dialect marker. There are large portions of the country that routinely substitute esh for s when it's followed by a t.
What do you do about this, Steve? Every once in a while, and I'll use Donald Trump as an example, he'll pull out a word like huge, U-G-E, meaning large, meaning huge. Do you guys wait a little while before putting it in the dictionary? What's the norm on that?
You're talking about that's also the pronouncing huge is huge, or pronouncing human is human, where the H is dropped, it becomes a y sound, is a well-known phonological aspect of certain varieties of American English, including those spoken in certain parts of New York City. So something like that is just a standard a regional variation. So in that specific case, that's something that's been known for decades, if not centuries, and it's just a phonological feature of that regionalism.
Do you publish a separate New York City dictionary just for the people of New York? You should consider that.
But they are out there. The Dictionary of American Regional English, which is published by Harvard University Press and is put together by people at the University of Wisconsin. For 55 years, they've been doing this exact type of thing, polling. In the 60s, they would send people out across the country, and now a lot of this, of course, can be done online, where they and it is a dictionary specifically devoted to regionalisms.
I do not want to blame millennials because I am not that type of person, but I have noticed that there's a word that I have said one way and everyone else has said one way, and now all of a sudden people are saying it differently. Let me explain. It's button. Button.
Button.
A lot of people
with
now,
D's instead of C's.
They say but I can't even
button?
Say button.
Yeah, I hear that.
It drives me insane. Button.
Well, technically, that consonant sound that you're making is it's called a flap. It's not a T. It's not a D. It's your tongue flapping against the top of the roof of your mouth. It's the English orthography. The English spelling doesn't have a symbol for that, so people commonly use a T. Or you might also be hearing where it's replaced not with a flap but with a glottal stop in certain dialects, a button, where it's kind of like a swallowed sound. Again, all of these are just different regional variations. And you'll find it consistent in that context.
It's almost, Steve, like, you remember when you'd take a true false quiz when you were in school and you didn't know if it was a T or an F, so you'd make a letter that was between a T and an F? It's your mouth's way of doing that, isn't it?
So you're right either way.
That's a nice analogy. I like that analogy.
Yeah.
All right, we have one more before we let you go, and Peter's on the line. And Peter, I'm with you on this one. Go ahead. What's the word?
Yeah, Bill and Wendy, fantastic show as usual.
Thank you, sir.
Wendy, I want to ask you, dear, how do you pronounce G-R-O-C-E-R-Y?
Groceries.
How?
Groceries, like with an S.
Okay. I hear so many people saying groceries.
I agree, and I don't like it. Steve,
no.
What do you think?
Technically, both correct. A lot of your examples you're coming up today are both variants that are acceptable. Grocery. Again, that sutish. If you go back to the word sibboleth or shibboleth, the biblical story about being able to identify what city someone came from by use of that one word, this sh distinction goes back centuries and millennia. So, there you go. In this case, they're both considered correct.
There you go, Peter. Thanks for listening. And almond or almond?
That's another one that has about four different pronunciations, I think. Let me bring that
one
up. you can drop the L or not, and then the vowel quality can be aw or ah. So you can get almond, 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 almond. There's a wide variety there.
Often or often?
Either or. For a long time, it was pronounced often. And then in the 1800s, when people became more literate, when literacy was widespread, because of the T in the spelling and people became more aware of the spelling, that silent T started getting restored, like in the middle of the 1800s. So even though words like listen, the T is silent, soften, it came back in often. So it was often, and then the T just crept in when people would see it in writing.
Crazy T.
And now creepy T. Yep. Yeah.
Steve Kleinedler, it's been a pleasure talking to you on this National Dictionary Day. Have a great day. You can follow him on Twitter. It's S. Kleinedler. And just Google him because he's all over the place. Steve, thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much.
Bye, Steve.
I very much appreciate it.
We'll do it again. Thanks.
This was fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, we'll take a quick break. We've got news coming next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thanks, Steve. It's Bill Effin. It's Wendy Snyder with you on WGN. Our phone number and text line are the same, 312-981-7200. Wendy, there's a reason we're playing the theme from Mulan.
Yes, I know
it. How long ago was Mulan out? About 20 years ago?
I never saw it.
I don't think I saw it either. I didn't see Mulan. I will eventually. About an hour and a half. Mulan has created something of a stir in the fast food business. Because when it first came out, McDonald's did a special promotion for Mulan in which you could get chicken McNuggets with a very special Szechuan sauce in honor of Mulan. So like I said, that was about 20 years ago, right? They took the sauce away. It became popular again because of a television show called Rick and Morty, an animated show that's on Adult Swim.
Which I watch on a regular basis, thanks to my boys.
Pretty funny.
It's pretty funny. It's dirty.
A little raunchy.
It's weird.
Yeah.
It's like Futurama meets Family Guy. I don't really know how to describe it, but this goofy sauce.
It's a packet of sauce.
It's dipping sauce.
It's kind of a hot, sweet, and sour sauce for your chicken McNuggets. So they put it out originally about 20 years ago when Mulan came out. Then the show Rick and Morty talked about it and how badly they wanted to have this sauce. McDonald's brings it back for a very limited time.
And very limited places.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
Last Saturday, I had to drive around to a couple McDonald's, I will admit, and they didn't have it. They never got any in. The closest one was like Edwardsville, Illinois or something.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of memes have been created. A lot of crazy people are upset that they didn't get a chance to get this Szechuan sauce.
It's selling like crazy online on eBay. People have put... Jasmine and I watched an auction earlier. One packet of it, one small packet, went for $90. And then there's a story in the paper today about a woman who traded three packets of her McDonald's Szechuan sauce for a car. Somebody wanted it so badly that they traded their car for it.
This is ridiculous. And McDonald's says, I think their exact quote was something like, they're going to go through the portal, because there's a portal in Rick and Morty, and bring the sauce back to the masses sometime this winter.
Yeah. You haven't seen the last of it. I mean, it's been a while since the last jolt of it. You know, it's Mulan. That's years and years ago. But play the portion of Rick and Morty where they talk about their love for the sauce, please.
Now you're going to have to go and do whatever I say, Morty, forever. And I'll go out and I'll find some more of that Mulan Szechuan teriyaki dipping sauce, Morty. Because that's what this is all about, Morty. That's my one-armed man. I'm not driven by avenging my dead family, Morty. That was fake. I'm driven by finding that McNugget sauce.
Nuggets.
I want that Mulan McNugget sauce, Morty.
Mulan.
That's my series arc, Morty.
Hell?
If it takes 9 seasons, I want my McNugget dipping sauce Szechuan sauce, Morty. That's going to take us all the way to the end, Morty. Season 9 more seasons, Morty. 9 more seasons until I get that dipping Szechuan sauce. For 97 more years, Morty. I want
about?
That McNugget.
That's it.
I love that he said, "That's my one-armed man." Do you know what that is?
From The Fugitive?
That's a reference to The Fugitive, in which Dr. David Kimball spent the whole show trying to find the one-armed man who killed his wife, so he's comparing the Moulin sauce. That's brilliant.
And didn't
That's
he
really
say something
funny.
About the arc?
Yeah, the series arc.
Yes. That, oh, the, I'm sorry.
The
I was
whole
thinking
series,
the arc from the arc of the Raiders. Yes.
No, he's saying the arc of the series will be spent with him trying to find the sauce. So because of that, rabid fan said, "This sauce must be really good." If this guy,
I bet it
to
sucks.
Well, the crazy thing is, you could go to any grocery store, go to Jewel, go to Mariano's, and they'll have a shelf full of Szechuan sauce.
It's not the same. If you get McDonald's sweet and sour sauce for their nuggets, it's not the same as the sweet and sour sauce at Wendy's or off the shelf. They're all a little different.
It is slightly different, but as I just pointed out, somebody just spent $90 this morning on one small packet. What is that, an ounce of it or two ounces of it at the most?
Not even two. It's this tiny.
It's a little packet.
You get about four dunks of a nugget.
Right. Somebody even now is just selling the empty packets. So they've used the sauce and then resealed the packets, and they'll sell you those for $10 each. Or like I said, there's a lady, this is out of Huffington Post, a lady who just traded. She got out early and found three packets of it, and somebody wanted it badly enough that they traded their car, their Volkswagen, for it.
What year?
A 2004 Volkswagen Golf MK4.
Come on.
But she said she saw them drive the car up, so she knew the car was in running order. For three packets of sweet and sour sauce.
Does it say Rick and Morty on it?
No.
I can't believe this goofy.
So.
I have a feeling you would like this, by the way, Rick
and
Morty.
I'm sure. It's
pretty
like
funny.
Something I would enjoy. And I would like the sauce, too. I like sweet and sour sauce and Szechuan sauce.
Well, it was available last Saturday. There were very select McDonald's, and they probably only got four packets. You know, like the doorbusters on Christmas, they only, you know, you can buy a TV for $1 and there's only one TV.
Right.
They had a very limited offer, a limited amount, limited stores. But now McDonald's says they're going to release it throughout the nation, at least USA, sometime this winter.
Here's a quick story. Rachel Marie, Macomb, Illinois. When McDonald's said that they were bringing it back, I thought it would be cool to get the sauce, she told Huffington Post. The 23-year-old graphic designer then drove 45 miles to Detroit early in the morning and waited hours until the sauces became available at 2 p.m. Isn't it interesting that they know the exact precise time that the sauce would be available? A lot of times there will be a buzz that a store is going to get a certain item, like around Christmas time, so you have to be there first in line in the morning when they open up. But this McDonald's in Detroit said specifically 2 p.m. That's when the sauce will be available. By the time that happened, there were hundreds of people waiting in line. Hundreds. The line snaked around the building. The McDonald's location only had 20 packets available, but both Marie, that's Rachel Marie of Macomb, Illinois, and one of her friends were among the lucky tastemakers who got the sauce.
But did they give one to a customer? Because they only had 20.
Yeah,
I'll
should
take
ration
five.
It out to one to a customer, right? I don't know how she
And you have
out
to buy
three.
McNuggets in order to get
right.
it.
Right. I was tempted to try it while watching the episode, she said. She's referring to Rick and Morty. That is until she got the idea to post a photo of the sauce packet on Pin Nation. That's a Facebook group dedicated to trading pins, those collectible pins.
Oh, I thought your pin number.
No.
Like, I'm not going to give that to anybody.
There was actually a large response with some nice pins, Marie told Business Insider. But if I could get a car, I thought, why not ask? And then the driven negotiator managed to find a person willing to trade a single Szechuan packet for a 2004 Volkswagen Golf MK4. Seems like a fair trade.
And just wait. They say they're going to release it this winter.
Right. I know. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. We're 312-981-7200 if you'd like to speak to us. Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. Wendy, just moments ago, I told you the story of this woman, Rachel Marie. She lives in Macomb, Illinois. She was lucky enough to get her hands on a couple of packets of McDonald's Szechuan sauce, a very, very rare delicacy. It first came out years and years ago when the movie Mulan was out. So Disney, in order to promote it at McDonald's, had this special Szechuan sauce. They discontinued it, but America has gone wild for it. They want it so badly, they're willing to trade a car for it. Here's my question. From the world of food, can you think of one or two or three things that they have made in the past that's your one-armed man, as they just described this, something that you would search and search and search for and not give up until you found it?
I have two of them for sure, and I have one that I think you and I will both be there.
I'm ready.
One of them, I don't remember what they were called, but they were frozen pizzas for the toaster from the 1970s.
Oh, I remember
Instant pizza or Poppins. They were round, and they were like the beginning of a pizza puff. They were
what
like
were
the,
they called? It wasn't...
Buitoni made instant pizza, and they made something called Poppins. Oh, those aren't it. Instant pizza or Toasterinos. Does that...
Toasterino?
It was a round thing that you'd put in your toaster.
I'm looking at a picture of it. I don't think I've ever seen a Toasterino before, but it's the same principle.
Yeah, well, those were...
Very thin pizzas.
But they were round.
Yeah. Yeah,
those I search high and low for, and it's not like a Hot Pocket, people. These were actually really good.
Yeah,
and then Aunt Jemima made these cornbread sticks that you also put in the toaster. They were three.
Now wait,
looked like little ears of corn.
It's the Aunt Jemima cinnamon stick, right?
Not cinnamon. It was cornbread.
Because I have the cinnamon stick is on the Aunt Jemima cinnamon sticks is on my list. Those were incredible. And the same thing, they were perforated, so you got three of
right,
them, but
so
they
broke
separated
them apart.
Really easily.
They looked like little ears of corn. Yeah. Mine did. Well, not mine, but hers, because it was cornbread. So they looked like little three ears of corn together. You'd put them in there, and you'd toast them on high. I'd liked them a little overcooked, actually, and then you could put butter on them. It was like just fresh cornbread.
The cinnamon sticks were shaped exactly
were
like that, but of course with a more cinnamony flavor. Incredibly good. I have no idea why they'd stop making those. People love cinnamon.
Aunt Jemima, both on our list.
Food. Oh, yeah, high up on my list.
All right, what's your other one?
I've got 40 of them.
Oh, geez.
Do you want to hear all of them?
Jell-O 1-2-3 on there? Because that was my third one.
Jell-O 1-2-3.
Three different...
It's like a science fair project.
Distinct layers of Jell-O. You'd get your gelatinous Jell-O. You'd get your kind of foamy Jell-O.
Yeah.
And then what was on the very top?
Like the foamy
Even
one
foamier.
I thought was the one on the top.
But there was
a
mid-range,
foam. Almost like a carbonated flavor.
Yes.
Right?
And Jell-O 1-2-3. And the miraculous thing about this stuff, my aunt used to make it, Aunt.
Yeah.
And she would just put it in the separate cups, like little glasses.
Like parfait glasses?
Yes.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, you would just pour it in there. It wasn't like
it's
she
miracle.
Slaved over the, you know, the stove boiling water. You'd
right.
pour it in there and it would just separate like that.
Incredible, wasn't it? Fun to make, fun to eat.
It was magical.
And they did bring it back for a very short time. Very, very short. Sometimes they tease you with it. They go, remember how much you love this? Well, you can't have it anymore.
I should get Rick and Morty to talk about it, and they'll bring it back.
All right. Also on my list, the Chocolite Bar.
Oh, it was so fluffy with the puffed rice in it.
It had a little thing in there, like a I guess it was puffed rice, but a
but
very
it was
small,
airy.
Yeah, incredibly good.
You could see like all the little bubbles of air in Chocolite. It was thick, and that was sectioned off. I've decided you like food that was sectioned off.
I do enjoy food that's sectioned off. I do. The Chocolite Bar was so light that sometimes you could make it float. You would just put it by your desk, and it would just levitate. That's how light it was. Also on my list, this was from KFC, and they brought it back twice, and it's nowhere near as good as the original Chicken Littles. They were like White Castles, but with chicken. They've brought them back twice, and they've changed the recipe. Nowhere near as good. Thanks for trying, Colonel, but they're not the original. I want the original.
Thanks for nothing, Colonel.
Thanks for nothing, Colonel Sanders, or many actors who play him. And then also on my list, I don't know if anyone will remember this but me, but for a while they made these dinners. This is back in the days of TV dinners, and they were called Sundown Supper, Circus Supper, and Safari Supper.
I remember these.
So you had regular food, miniaturized, a very small hamburger, a very small hot dog, and then about three different sides, and what they called chocolate pudding, but I don't know what it was. There wasn't any chocolate or pudding in it, but they referred to it as chocolate pudding. And there was some kind of a potato thing that even they didn't even try to. They
it was
just
mashed
called
potatoes.
It the circus potato or the safari potato.
It was like kids' meals because they had those, but it was way better when we were little.
Right.
And Bill, wasn't there like a little backdrop that attached
a 3D
to
you?
Yes.
Backdrop?
Yes.
Thank you for remembering, Kim.
I do remember.
Depending on the theme, be it safari, circus, or sundown, you got a 3D background so you could pretend you were out in the Old West or at the circus and enjoy your miniature food and whatever the pudding was.
Yeah, but it was always, we didn't really have babysitters, but my mom would just get us some so we could pretend we had a babysitter.
Right. Instead of spending 50 cents an hour, right. You could pretend you're at the circus. Enjoy.
And you really would set it up and you're like, wow, this is cool. This is fun. The food really wasn't even that good, but the whole memory of it was awesome.
Right. Yeah, incredible. I miss those tremendously. All right, let's do this. We'll take...
God, I want all that stuff back.
I used to think to myself, this must be how people who work at the circus must eat. And then years later, I realized I was right. That was kind of exactly how they ate. All right, we'll take a quick break. Kim has the news, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
The beauty of that isn't the song itself. It's hearing a horse in the background. I don't know why, but that makes it more dimensional for me.
I disagree strongly.
Do you like the song more?
The beauty is the song.
All right.
Yeah,
Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. Fine, fine columnist. For how many years, Eric? How long have you been at the Trib?
Well, I've been at the Trib for 37 years. I've been a columnist.
Wow.
That's pretty amazing.
I know.
Really?
For a guy as young looking as I am.
Yes.
It's been a long time.
Wait, yeah, you're lying.
No, I'm not lying.
37.
Came here in 1980.
My God.
That's a long time.
No, it's a long time.
I was still in high school.
I wasn't born yet.
Yeah, you're a liar.
Eric, a couple things that you wanted to bring up having to do with America's pastime, baseball. You have a gripe or two, huh?
I have a gripe or two. One is this thing with the rally towels.
I hate that.
I hate the rally towels. It's like, I think, what did Pittsburgh start it many years ago? The terrible towels, the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I think, boy, I'm trying to think.
Who had the rally monkey?
Wasn't
there one?
Was there a rally monkey?
I thought so.
I don't know. I think the Steelers got the most notoriety because of their towels, but I don't remember if they were the first ones.
It's kind of like the wave. It's one of those things where if you're the school that thinks of it,
yeah,
you do it, then it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But if you're just copying another team and the Dodgers fans are using it, and I think the Cub fans, I've seen Cub fans doing it too, waving rally towels. The Cub fans are cool enough not to do the wave.
Right.
Give them that.
Right.
But
that's because they're not paying attention to the game.
Did you see yesterday during the game? I saw this twice. They were throwing a beach ball around the stands, like at crucial moments in the game. At a very close 1-1 tie, there's beach balls going around the stands.
What, was Jimmy Buffett at the game?
Yes. There's a bunch of parrot heads out there.
Yes.
I didn't see that.
They just need something to amuse themselves. And I can't figure out, you get to see Mary Hart during these games because
right.
She's always right behind home plate. With her husband, by the way, who Steve pointed out, Steve Bertrand told me, do you know who her husband is?
I don't.
Do you remember the name Bert Sugarman?
Yes.
Where would people know that name from?
Oh, I'm thinking Danny Sugarman, who wrote all those Doors books and stuff.
No.
Bert Sugarman.
Bert Sugarman was the producer of Midnight Special.
Oh, remember? Yes.
So on Saturdays, they would have this is before Saturday Night Live, they would have bands come out and perform for an hour, and it was called Bert Sugarman's Midnight Special. That's Mary Hart's husband. You get to see them behind the backstop.
I wasn't born yet.
You weren't born yet? But you know who's missing is Larry King was always there last year, and I don't know where Larry is.
I hope he's okay.
I hope he's all right.
15 years ago, the Angels had the rally monkey.
There really wasn't a rally monkey?
With some help from Ace Ventura. Yep.
Oh, that's excellent.
See, I don't mind a rally monkey. I just feel like this.
So if everyone in the stands were waving a monkey around, you'd be okay,
with it. Well, I mean, at least originally the rally monkey was a good idea. Don't like that. The thing that I don't like is I don't like how teams go nuts after they win like a division series.
The celebrating.
A win is a win,
just
you guys.
A bit much.
I'm all for it.
They have not accomplished that much. No one is going to remember who won the division.
Yes, they will. How about the guy who caught the ball at the end of the game last night? He was like by himself in the corner of the outfield in the bleachers or whatever and just had his mitt. He was all by himself.
Yeah, that was exciting.
I did not see that because as soon as that ball went over the wall,
I turned off
the TV.
Too upsetting.
Apparently people tell me this catch was kind of cool. I can't watch another team dogpiling.
I
can't watch other fans going crazy.
I know.
It's over.
All right, but let's go back to the celebrating thing because I've heard other people say until you win the World Series, you have no business celebrating because that's the ultimate
you
prize.
You can celebrate, but not they're delirious. They're spraying each other with champagne.
But don't you
goggles.
Think after a season, a six-month-long season, 162-game season, just the mere fact that you've made it to the postseason, that's not enough to celebrate?
No, you get me wrong. Celebrating is fine.
Just not excessive.
They just go crazy. It's like those kind of celebrations used to be reserved for winning it all.
Yeah.
And I think it's still kind of true. I mean, you don't see this in college basketball. When the team advances to the Elite Eight, they don't like go in the locker room and cover everything up with, of course, they're college, so they can't
right,
drink.
They can't
so
have
they're
champagne.
Spraying each other with seltzer water. Or but they just don't, I don't think in any other sport do they go as crazy winning a preliminary round in the playoffs as they do in baseball.
It's supposed to be exciting.
I'm all for it. I've heard other people say the same thing. That,
I'm
oh,
with them.
Please.
But give them my number.
Did you see the football player yesterday? And I don't know who he was, and I don't know what team. I just saw it on a highlights reel. So he intercepts a pass at the end of the game, and then his celebratory dance includes him holding up his arms and getting frisked by three other players, and then they pretend to handcuff him and take him off. So at the time when I saw it, I thought, oh, that's pretty funny. This is well choreographed. He's not really up for it. He's not in any trouble, but these guys pretended to frisk him and take him off in handcuffs.
Because he stole the ball.
Yeah.
Excellent.
But now everybody's on him saying, because of everything that's going on in football and the way that police are treating people, you can't be doing something like that. So they're trying to decide if he should be fined or
are you kidding
me?
They didn't beat him. They didn't beat him or anything.
No. Okay. No, there wasn't anything like that. But they just said that it was insensitive at a time when the NFL needs to show some sensitivity, that this whole act was very insensitive
was
and
it
hurtful.
Was it a black guy being frisked by white guys? Was there any racial component to the celebration?
As far as I'm concerned, there was not. I just saw a player
making
a catch.
Well, as far as you're concerned, I'm saying
I don't
reality.
Think there was. No. What's the reality was, no, I don't think so.
I am doing I away with so. Sensitivity. That's really, come
I know.
On.
I know.
That sounds objectively pretty funny.
It was funny. And so, I mean, so well put together. Because obviously these guys practiced this. It just didn't come together that easily. So I gave him credit for that, but he could be in some trouble.
Well, I mean, we get to the celebration, and there was some criticism for a while. And the NFL tried to crack down on people celebrating in
for
the
years.
End zone, right? They said that you couldn't. And those are kind of fun, but those aren't, you know, prolonged, sustained, spraying each other with
right.
champagne and stuff. I mean, the kind of, you know, the little celebrations, the little dances, the Icky Shuffle. Remember the Icky
I
Shuffle?
I do remember. Yeah.
It was fun.
Icky Woods, was that the player's
Icky
name?
Icky Woods, yeah.
So what was in it for the NFL?
Tiger's older brother.
To ban that? What was the NFL? Was it to save time? What were they getting out of
I think
taking
was,
a celebratory
well,
dance?
Well, there was some concern that it was not sportsmanlike. And there is a sense that they did get rid of, like, the sack dance. Remember where you would Mark Gastineau, if that name's familiar to you? Were you, born, were you born for that?
He had great hair.
He would come and he would stand over the quarterback and taunt him.
Yeah.
There's something about that where you're actually taunting your opponent. That's bad sportsmanship, and I'm for getting rid of that. But I don't think
when you get a touchdown, do it.
When you're celebrating in the end zone, you're celebrating with your teammates. You're not going over to the other bench and pointing at him. That's cool with me. I think. You know?
What about when the player does that thing with his ear where he pretends that he can't hear the crowd cheering to make the crowd cheer louder,
or they do it to the opposing fans?
I have never seen that ever.
You've
That's
never seen
stupid.
That?
Stupid.
It's really stupid. But I've seen a bunch of players do it over the year where they score a touchdown and then they put their hand to their ear like, I can't hear you applauding for me.
Oh, I think it's more done. Now we should ask the audience, but I think it's more done to taunt the other.
It's done that
fan.
Too.
Like, let's
hear
you
now.
Yeah.
So,
but you know,
still stupid.
It is stupid. It is very stupid.
there is, I think, a desire by part of these leagues to maintain sportsmanship. I think you want to set a good example. You don't want kids on the playground taunting each other when they're playing sports and so
right.
on.
Right.
But there's a difference between celebrating a home run or celebrating a touchdown or even celebrating a basket. I think it was the NCAA crackdown because players for a while are popping their jerseys. Remember that? Like you'd hit a basket and then you'd hold on to your jersey and you'd hold out the name of your school.
Yeah.
I think they cracked down on that.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like there are too many stuffed shirts
maybe
out there who are
being popped.
Not popping. But I think sportsmanship is important. But again, it's like when you win the division series, you should act like they used to say about scoring a touchdown. You should act like you've been there before
right.
a little bit, you know, like so.
Now, you know what's happened? I don't know if this is happening in other sports, but it's happening in tennis because I follow that very closely. In high school tennis and in college tennis, there's constant taunting going on between the players.
While they're playing?
While they're playing. You don't see it at all in the pros, zero in the pros. But for some reason, in both high school and in college tennis, you're allowed to taunt your opponent.
That's so amateur.
Awful. It's awful. I would not have done it when I was in high school. I didn't play in college, but I played in high school. There's no way I would have done it. But now coaches get on the players if they don't do it.
So the idea is you rattle your opponent.
Yeah.
Say, see this ball last time? You're going to see it right now.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Tennis is supposed to be kind of a quiet
sport. A gentleman's game.
Sport.
I thought it was, yeah,
right.
It was,
No, I've seen it happen several times, and I don't like it at all.
But isn't there something also going on in tennis where there are players who are lauded for their sportsmanship because they will call fouls on themselves?
Oh, sure.
And
yeah.
So on. I mean,
you see that every once in a while.
And, of course, golf is that way. Golf, you're supposed to call penalties on yourself.
Yeah.
Never do. I feel like it's wrong.
It hurts.
I feel like it would impact my score.
It so doesn't impact. Don't do it. Eric Zorn is here, everybody. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Eric Zorn is here. You know him from his long, 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 long career over at the Chicago Tribune. Eric, am I hearing this correctly? There's something about Donald Trump you're not happy about?
Something, and it's among the things I'm not happy about. This is maybe a small one, but I thought it was an interesting wrinkle in the Donald Trump style book. And that is that last week he attacked Bob Corker, Senator Corker from Republican
Little
Tennessee,
Bob Corker?
As Little Bob, he's called Liddle, criticized him for that. He's going after him, but calling him little. Corker is 5'7".
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that I said, he's been doing this. You know, Marco Rubio, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Who
little
is,
Marco.
5'9", 5'10".
He was calling
him Little Marco.
Yeah.
And he's also referring to Kim Jong-un as Little Rocket Man.
Mm-hmm.
Little is one of the things that he derides people. He uses their height mm-hmm. as a way of insulting them. And and there's so many examples of this. I found a few more looking through this. He called George Stephanopoulos, Little George Stephanopoulos, Fat Little Rosie O'Donnell, Little Donnie Deutsch from MSNBC.
Who, by the way, he was very close friends with for years, and then something happened and all of a sudden
Bob Corker was a big ally.
Yeah, he was.
Corker's a Republican senator from Tennessee who's been giving Trump a hard time lately. Little Michael Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York. Rapper Mac Miller called him Little Mac.
What about Lil Wayne?
And yeah, right. And Daily Show host Jon Stewart called him Little Jon Stewart. But never has he called Vladimir Putin little.
Oh, interesting.
And Putin is the same height. Most of these people are 5'7", 5'8", 5'6". There's someone there. George Stephanopoulos is reportedly 5'5". Doing this story, I was having a hard time finding out exactly how tall people are because most of that's self-reported, right?
Oh, right, sure.
So Trump self-reports at 6'2 or 6'3. His driver's license, Politico found his driver's license that said 6'2. But, of course, in your driver's license, you don't have – they don't measure you.
No, they
don't
weigh
you and measure
no.
you.
Yeah.
They sort of take your word
Thank
for
God.
It.
Thank God.
Up on the scale, ma'am. No, I'd rather not drive. Thank you.
I'll walk. Are you kidding me? But this is this thing, and it's really a strange thing, and nobody really talks about it. But of all the things, it's kind of like criticizing someone for their skin color, right?
Right.
Like if he had said, Black Ben Carson is, it'd be absurd. It would be offensive. Because it's not. This is not a choice that you make. This is not. This is your height is your height. Your skin color is your skin color. And to criticize someone for that is like almost the most prejudicial, most bigoted thing you can do. And yet nobody says anything about it. And I don't see any really. I'm a tall person. I'm taller than Donald Trump. I never call him Little Donald Trump. Yeah, I'm 6'10". So no.
Yep. No. And getting bigger.
No. Yeah, I'm about 6'4", and Trump is about 6'2". But that doesn't make any, it has no correlation as far as in my experience with anyone's character, with anyone's intelligence.
It's reminiscent of, remember in grade school when kids were first learning to be mean to each other?
Right.
And that's what they would do is they would pick the most obvious thing.
Right. And often they, something that you had no control over. I mean,
right.
If you want to criticize Bob Corker for his clothes or his hairstyle or his statements or his votes, these are things that he's chosen.
Right.
I mean, but to go after his height.
Yeah.
And this seems like it's something that people don't realize that this is a classic bullet. And you point out the elementary school quality.
Yeah.
It is a classic elementary school bully thing. You pick a physical attribute over which the person has no control at all. And you go right for that.
How's his wife's anti-bullying campaign going? Is it going well?
I don't think so.
No?
It's got to start at home.
No?
But one of the things that really struck me was that he goes after people like this all the time.
Right.
and almost never on substance. He never comes back on you know with a substantive reply. He's just like little Marco. And of course, he did things with Jeb Bush, was low energy Jeb. Now, arguably, Jeb Bush could have had you know some more caffeine and been higher energy.
Right.
But and we've also, you remember, he got a lot of grief for going after Carly Fiorina. Remember, mm-hmm. like, look at that face. Can you imagine that face?
Mm-hmm.
And so people recognize that that was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's also a fairly growing sense in our society that fat shaming people is wrong. Like if someone is overweight, that he didn't go after fat Chris Christie, for instance, which you know
he didn't.
I don't think that way. I looked. Yeah. I actually searched his Twitter feed for a bunch of different insults, and Little was the one that came up a lot more than anything else. But we're sort of getting our minds around that you don't shame people, you don't insult people for their weight anymore, you know, and that because we recognize that people don't have the kind of control over that we like to imagine that they do, like to imagine that we do. So, but why is it that it's okay to make fun of someone's for their height?
I'm confused by that
and
also.
I actually made a quick list of. Do we have time for this? I'm going on and on. But there are a number of people who you know in history who were fairly short, fairly accomplished. Martin Luther King and Winston Churchill were 5'7". Ulysses S. Grant and Humphrey Bogart were 5'8".
Humphrey Bogart was only 5'8".
I know, a little shrimp. Mahatma Gandhi was 5'4". And I think James Madison was 5'3 or 5'4".
Oh, was he really?
Tiny.
Yeah. Well, of course, in those days, people were tinier. But, you know, I mean, lots of
Napoleon.
People. Napoleon.
He's the most famous.
There are a lot of people are very accomplished. Carnegie, I think Andrew Carnegie was also short.
Yeah.
I'm going to get letters from somebody's descendant or you know, their relative saying that I'm wrong about their height. But I mean, there is no correlation, as far as I can tell, between accomplishment, again, you know, character, morality,
and their height.
So why would you go after someone's height?
Did you see Steve Bannon said that he doesn't expect the president to finish out his full term?
Yeah, he's declared open war on the Republican establishment.
Yeah.
I think a very interesting turn of events. He's going to be running candidates, I think, in all the senatorial primaries against these establishment candidates who had voted for Mitch McConnell for the Senate leadership.
So what's his game in doing this, do you think, exactly? What's he shooting for?
I think it's all about disruption. It's all about his whole nationalist agenda. He wants to drag the Republican Party further to the right. And further into this nationalist pose, this anti-free trade.
But if
stuff.
He's successful in doing this, he splits the party, doesn't
he? Right. Yeah, he does. And in fact, Lindsey Graham, I think, was on one of the chat shows saying that to the extent that he's successful, he's going to ruin the Republican Party's chances for hanging on to their majorities in the House and Senate and probably the White House in 2020. So there's all kinds of problems with that, but you know someone like Steve Bannon looks at this as a long game proposition.
Yeah.
What he's trying to do is get a hold of the party and fundamentally change the party. Realize that you can't really necessarily do that overnight, but over the course of several election cycles, you can do that. Now, I don't think it's a successful formula because I don't think it's a majority proposition. But you know, he knows something
we don't know.
I don't think so.
All right,
I don't think so. I think he believes things that we don't believe. That's my guess.
Eric Zorn. He's very tall. Boy, you're very tall.
That's true.
Totally tall.
But it means nothing.
It means nothing really in the long run. Read him in the Chicago Tribune, everybody. We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has next. Thanks, Eric. It's WGN.
All right, Wendy and I will be heading toward the stream where this sort of thing is easily absolved. Or you can stay right here because Steve Bertrand's got the Winchester Business
Lunch. So, technology, for the first time ever this weekend, I'm watching the Cubs game.
Yes.
And I'm notified by a home run or a change in the score by my phone before I see it on TV.
Oh, that's not good.
Have you noticed that?
I don't get baseball alerts.
I've got the At-Bat app on my phone, the Major League Baseball alert. And so
there's no 7-second delay on that. It's instantaneous.
It's instantaneous. So literally, Addison Russell hit his home run last night, and my phone lit up in my peripheral vision before the ball was out of the park. I mean, so phones are almost now becoming more instantaneous than TV. It has to do with the HD delay and all of that.
Now we know what the ESP and ESPN stands for.
Early SP.
Yes.
What? Early scores?
Just ESP. They're premonition. They're
okay.
Extrasensory perception.
I think I just caught a little windy. I'm sorry. I missed that one.
No, my brain's working, just not my mouth.
So that's... that's it for us.